Har du et enkeltpersonforetak eller en liten bedrift? Da du sikkert lei av å høre meg snakke om hvor enkelt det å sende faktura med fiken. Så vi gir oss her, fordi vi liker enkelt. Fiken, superenkelt regnskap. Prøv gratis på fiken.no.
Hei og velkommen til Frilanslivet. Det en podcast av meg, Hanna von Bergen, og min kollega Kristina Skreiberg. Vårt mål med denne podcasten det å være en faglig og inspirerende kanal for alle som jobber for seg selv i medie-, kunst- og kulturbransjen. Denne episoden sponset av regnskapsprogrammet Fiken. Som frilanser det mye du skal holde styr på, og mange synes kanskje ikke at regnskap det letteste å ta fatt i. Fiken har som mål å gjøre regnskap lett. I Fiken kan du sende fakturer, ta bilder av kvitteringer med Fiken-appen, levere moms og skattemelding, alt fra samme sted. Du kan prøve gratis i 30 dager på fiken.no. And I will now switch over to English because today's guest is from Leeds in the UK. Susie Davis is a 48-year-old choreographer, award-winning dancer and teacher. She started her career dancing in Monty Python's film The Meaning of Life when she was 11 years old. And this experience kickstarted her love for dancing and she has danced ever since. Susie holds a degree in contemporary dance and choreography at the London Contemporary Dance School. And she has lived and worked in Scandinavia since 1992. Susie has worked with many different dance companies and choreographers, including Uppercut Danseteater and Carte Blanche, and runs her own company now called Deed, together with her work and life partner, Mathias Ekholm. Soon, Susie is going to be part of CODA, Oslo International Dance Festival, which is happening the 16th until the 26th of October in Oslo. And Susie is part of the project Diverse Nordic Voices, which is a two-year mentor program with six dance artists with functional variations. And Susie has rheumatoid arthritis. Is that said correctly?
Rheumatoid arthritis.
Yes, right, thank you. Which is a chronic illness affecting her body. And I'm very interested to hear how life as a dancer is affected by having a physical disability. Because the main aspect of being a dancer is using your body. So what happens when the body starts to fail on you? And I'm also very curious to hear what experiences and learnings Susie has from a life as a dancer after almost 30 years in the business. That's impressive. And how is the difference going from being a dancer in other people's projects to running your own company? And how is it to work with your boyfriend?
Great.
You're in for a treat. Hi, Susie. Very nice to have you here.
Hello. Thanks for inviting me.
So I wanted to start by hearing a bit, what is it about dance that you find intriguing?
Oh, well, that's a difficult one. I mean, I think that I started to dance because it was just something I felt was innate in me. It was instinctive. So actually, the first thing I did was gymnastics. So it was something about being physical that was really important for me. Because I was throwing myself around as a child and my parents were a bit like, we need to do something about this. So off they sent me to do gymnastics. And I did that for a while, but it became very competitive. And I started to understand that this was not something that I could continue to do. It was a bit terrifying. People were having quite serious injuries at training sessions. And so I thought, I can't continue with this. At the same time, I'd still been dancing as well. My dance teacher was very clear that she didn't want me to do gymnastics because it affects your body in a different way. And it, you know, you get a very sort of flexible spine, which isn't always such a good thing for dance. I mean, it's a good thing, but at the same time, gymnastics is different for the body. So I quit the gymnastics and just started to focus more on dance. And I didn't ever question why I was doing it, really. It was just, I just had to do it. And so I went to different, I did all kinds of dance. You know, I did ballet, jazz, tap, Spanish, folk dance, all types. It didn't matter really what it was. I just loved every minute of it. And it gave me a little bit of an escape, I suppose, from real life. I don't know. But it's where I felt most at home. It's an identity thing, I suppose. Yes, it's where I felt most me was moving to music. I think I had already decided from a very young age that that's what I was going to do. I was going to absolutely try to become a dancer. That's what I would hopefully have as a career.
Mm. Did you know anybody that worked as a dancer at that stage?
No, nobody. In my family, my parents are both academics, but my grandparents were ballroom dancers. It wasn't their career. But at the age of 65, when they retired from their normal lives, normal jobs, they actually re-educated as ballroom dancing teachers. So they did that for the rest of their lives. They had a small school, and that was very inspiring because they loved to dance also. And they won lots of competitions as ballroom dancers. So, yes, I suppose it's in the family in that sense. Different kind of dance, but still a hobby that somehow led to bigger things, you know. That's the time of their lives that they were the most satisfied and happy, I think, when they were doing that. Yeah.
And did it change your image of dance before kind of attending the London Contemporary Dance School? Or was it kind of what you thought it would be to go into the profession? Because going from it, kind of loving it and having it as a hobby and then making it your profession, how was that change?
I mean, if we go back to actually when I did the Monty Python film, that was an interesting experience because we had to go through a big audition process, and a lot of the other kids there were very sort of experienced with even just how to audition, and I didn't have a clue. And so actually what happened was that, I mean, at that point, I was still doing quite a lot of gymnastics as well. So when I went to the audition, it was the first time I'd ever had to pick up choreography. And so I just felt like I was flailing about. And then I just thought, oh, well, that's it then. I'll just leave. So I just left the audition. I didn't think that anything had come of it, you know. And then I went on holiday at that point. It was the summer holidays. And when I came back, there was a phone call and they said, we've been trying to get hold of you. We'd like to have your daughter in the film. And that was a wake-up call for me, yes. Those kinds of situations, I think I never really felt very comfortable in audition situations. But I did a lot of research as a teenager because I had such a passion for it. So I tried to watch anything that was on the telly, which there wasn't much. It was usually also about classical dancers. But I would just absorb it and I had magazines and, you know, I was just looking at all the models that were out there at that time. And I suppose finally I sort of started to understand that the classical world was not a world I wanted to go into. And I think that had something to do with that I wanted to experiment more with different ways of moving or expressing myself. So I actually had decided that London Contemporary was a place that I was really interested in, also because I liked the company. There was a company then, London Contemporary Dance Company, which is no longer exists, but that was my goal, that company, because I'd seen them, and what the women were doing in that company was so attractive to me, because they were doing, it was extremely physical, and they were just as strong as the men, you know, and I felt that I could relate to that on a physical level very much. So when I came to London Contemporary, I was prepared in a way. I wasn't prepared for how hard it was going to be for me, because I hadn't really, hadn't been dancing every day. I'd had other things, school and, you know.
Normal life.
And I know, you know, people, there were kids there who, or kids, adults who were, had been, they'd been doing it every day, you know, from the age of 10. So that was a shock for me. So I spent most of my time at London Contemporary just being exhausted. I was very tired. I had to work as well, you know, so I had two jobs and then commuting all over the place to get to school. They were also very encouraging, the school. They gave me a scholarship in my second year and really encouraged me in a way that I think I wasn't completely prepared for, because they were really throwing me in at the deep end with and saying, you're going to be able to do this and you'll be able to do that. And I didn't feel like I had that sort of self-esteem or confidence to go, yeah, absolutely, that's where I'm heading. So I think I regret really a little bit that I wasn't more pushy, perhaps, in certain situations. And
what kind of situations?
Well, for instance, I did an audition while I was there. One of the dancers in London Contemporary Dance Company wanted me to be a part of a project, and I had to do a small audition. And the audition was in their studio, and all of the dancers in the company were watching the audition. And I just fell apart. I did a very bad audition, and I knew it myself. I could feel it. I wasn't surprised at all. I didn't get the job. But then I thought, oh, I'm going to have to really work on that, not be affected by those kinds of situations. And it's very interesting when you go into audition situations how people change. Some people really can just switch to another way, and that was at a time I learned very, very quickly from that situation that I had to. You have to sort of
elbow
your way to the front and stick yourself under people's noses, and that goes against everything for me. I found that very, very hard.
So how did you work with getting sharper elbows?
I put myself into all sorts of audition situations. That was actually the way to do it. There weren't so many workshops available then. I think it was the way to get your experience was to go to these big auditions, and sometimes they were a kind of workshop anyway, a couple of days, but generally it was a cattle market, and you would be thrown out after 30 minutes sort of. So, and you didn't always know what they wanted, so you just had to. There wasn't the same sort of information. We didn't have social media, so you couldn't really find out. You just heard there was an audition and you would just go to it.
Oh, scary.
Sometimes there were queues down the block, and you just had to stand in line and go in and do your thing. And then so I auditioned for everything from really sort of contemporary avant-garde to musicals. You know, I did all of them. And they were great experiences for me. Even though if I didn't do well in an audition, I understood why, you know, okay, I don't fit this profile. But it really helped me work on my confidence and understand something about performing that was invaluable, really.
So that's kind of way in the past. We're going to kind of move back to also looking at different things you've done before. But soon in the future, around the very next corner, Koda, which I talked about in the introduction, is coming, Oslo International Dance Festival. And can you tell us a bit more about your participation in this festival?
Well, I'm a part of this mentoring program, two-year mentoring program, Diverse Nordic Voices. We've had two meeting points already. It's two artists from Iceland, two from Norway, and two from Sweden. And we're meeting in the different countries and workshopping things and trying out things to do with our own development of our own artistic ideas based in disability. well, in my case anyway. So our first meeting was in Iceland last year. And that was the first time we'd met as a group. And we had workshops together. And then we met again in Stockholm this year, earlier this year, where we sort of had to try to come up with how we want to work with this program. So we've all found mentors. I have a mentor who is a wonderful artist called Wendy Houston, who is from the UK. And I think, and we're all developing something as a part of this. And we are, our next meeting is during CODA. So it'll be interesting to hear what path or what choices people are making now about how they want to continue on the program. For me, it's I want to work with a solo performance, which well, it has to do with my own personal experience of having something that has affected my life as a dancer. And as I said to you before the interview, this is something that's new for me. Even though I've been chronically ill for many, many years, it's not something that I have put into my artistic work. I've still sort of continued to work as a able-bodied, normal person. So this is a new departure for me. It's new for me to talk about it, and it's through this, through Diverse Nordic Voices, that I have felt able to approach the subject and feel that there is some support behind me, you know, with people who know about it and can really help me, put me on the right track.
Yeah, and I think it's really nice that you want to come here and talk a bit about that, among other things as well.
Yeah.
But can you tell us a bit about what is the illness? And I mentioned it, tried to pronounce it correctly, but yeah, just a bit, what is it and how did you, when did you get it and how has kind of that period been?
It's, the illness is called rheumatoid arthritis, and a lot of people tend to mix it up with osteoarthritis, which is more a wear and tear that you get as you are become older. Most people end up with some kind of arthritis later in life, but rheumatoid arthritis is an autoimmune disease, so it is the immune system attacking the joints, which can lead to permanent deformation of the joints, in very, very serious cases, it can be crippling, medication is very, very good now. But when I first felt something, it was, of course, as a dancer, you're very aware of pain in your body because it's what you're working with. It's your tool. So you learn to deal with injuries and how to train and how to keep your body going. and I started to have pain that was it was pain I'd not experienced before. It was new. And it felt as if I would wake up and it would feel as if something was broken. So I went to the doctor, and the doctor, he thought, well, it's probably something to do with you being a dancer, you know. Mm. Mm. And I said, no, this doesn't feel like that. And I know. So I actually had to insist on a blood test, because I had an instinct that this was really not good. And then it was actually several weeks before I got any results. It wasn't like it was rushed through or anything. And so during that period, I'd been back to the UK because I was a dancer in Carte Blanche when this happened. And over those weeks in the UK, I just got worse and worse. And I basically couldn't walk. And by the time I came back to Bergen, to Carte Blanche, people were a bit shocked when they saw me because I'd lost a lot of weight. It's like all the muscles had just dropped off because I hadn't been able to do anything for a few weeks. I'd just been sort of sitting about wondering why I couldn't move and why I was in so much pain and panicking about what it was. And then I came back and the doctor got the results that there was inflammation in the blood. And then it was, I had to visit a rheumatologist who then confirmed that it was inflammation in the body. And then I was supposed to go into hospital, into Haukeland. And there was a waiting time. They wanted me to wait 3 months.
3 months? Wow.
And this is where I was actually fortunate to be working in a permanent position in a job, because Carte Blanche then wrote a letter and said she needs to be seen sooner. Otherwise, I think I might have had to wait. And that's when the most damage is done, is in the beginning, because you have no medication and the inflammation is very aggressive in the very start of the illness. So when I came into Haukeland, they were like, oh, my goodness, you should have been here a month ago. And I said, yeah, well, I probably would have had to wait even longer if Carte Blanche hadn't stepped in. So, but then I was in Haukeland for 3 weeks and pumped with steroids and everything to get the inflammation down and get the diagnosis, because there are different forms. So then I was diagnosed with it, and you know, I felt like my life had ended. I mean, it was devastating, really. I had, you know, great colleagues and friends around me. Thank goodness for that, because it was a very confusing time. And also because the doctors didn't know what the future was for me. They couldn't tell me if I was ever going to dance again. So I couldn't really understand how it could go from being physically fine a few months earlier and now being in this state. I don't know. I didn't... It's like when you're ill, as a lot of people say, and you're in it, you don't really see how it was until later. I mean, I started having panic attacks and all sorts of things that had never happened to me before. I'd been so strong, sort of, and managing. And then I was just not managing at all. So, and I didn't go to speak to anybody until years later.
Mm.
Which was a mistake, probably. But, and I think that's probably why it's also taken me so long to talk about it as well. Because I just thought, oh, I have to get on with my life now. I have to do, what am I going to do? I just panicked. I have to do something else. So then I just rejected dance, really. I went on a sick leave and then I went back to Carte Blanche and I was trying to work there in another way, sort of, on the other side, a bit of rehearsal directing. And of course, my boss at the time, Arne Fagerholt, he said, you're not ready to do that. And I was a bit like, but why? But of course I wasn't ready. I was a complete mess. So I couldn't have a rehearsal director who was, you know, having these kinds of issues. So I understood that. So, of course, then I realised, okay, I'm going to have to, I can't work here anymore. It's not going to work for me because it's a very physical job working in Carte Blanche. It's 24/7, basically, and, you know, you have to be fit to do that job.
You were about 30, 31?
I was 31, yes, so. when I first had symptoms. Took a couple of years to get the medication right. It was different times then, as far as there wasn't any NAV. It was Aetat and Trygdekontor. And so they had to apply, the hospital had to apply for a certain medication for me that was a new type of medication. So I went on sort of the oldest medication to start with, which was a kind of Celliift. And then they applied for this new medication. And that, when I got that, that was after a couple of years. Life changed for me because it improved my mood and my appetite came back. And because the other medication, I had problems with that one. It made me a bit sick. So that was like a new lease of life, actually, to get that new medication. That's a whole another side to the illness, you know, medications and on and off different types of medications and in and out of hospital. That's another podcast. But it is still a massive learning process because things are changing all the time. I mean, things are changing anyway, but, you know, my body also is changing and doing things I don't want it to do. And I have no control over it. But of course, and everybody goes through that because that's part of an aging process as well. But this is added on top of that.
How does it feel, if I can ask, kind of, because now you've found kind of really good medications. You had this for almost 20 years. How is the feeling when you dance, and kind of what limitations do you experience?
Well, if I were to put it into simple terms, I can't put weight on my hands. So, floor work is limited. My feet are very sensitive. My hands are very sensitive. So anything with partnering work is frightening, unless it's we've set up very clear rules. That's what I have to do, really. So it's easier for me to just work alone, and then I can work around it.
And
so
difficult being a dancer and kind of having those limitations to deal with.
Yes. There's a sorrow in that, because there's something very nice with working in a team, and there's less and less of that, I suppose, really. And Matthias and I are working quite on our own at the moment. It's we've chosen that also a bit, I feel like I really have to find new ways all the time, which is good, but it can be a bit. This is the thing about just using your voice, and so you can do that forever, really.
Mm.
If you don't lose your voice or have something horrible affecting that. I've started incorporating text. Actually, that's been a way to work with my expression as a performer.
At what point did you kind of move your way back into dancing again?
Well, as I say, I rejected dance, and I'd also started having a new relationship with somebody, and it was interesting. I mean, our relationship started with me being ill.
Yeah, right, it's basically a heavy period to meet somebody, but also fantastic, I can imagine, something different.
When I think about it, I'm quite amazed, actually, how we managed in the beginning there, because we moved to Stockholm. He's Swedish. We were both starting again, actually. I mean, Matthias had his network as a dancer, so he managed to work a bit, but he was also thinking about the next steps as well in his career. For me, I was on the internet every day going, right, I'm going to do that education. I'm going to be a lawyer. Yes. Right. I'm happy about that decision. And then I would wake up the next morning. Oh dear. No, I don't want to do that. So this was going on and on. And I was just looking at all these different possibilities. I did a very good education as a Pilates instructor, which was good for me at the time because it was exactly what my body needed. Pilates, just say, brilliant training and very good training for protecting the joints and building up the small muscles around the joints. So that was a good thing. But then I just didn't want to do that as a job. I thought, I can't do that being in a studio all day saying the same thing over and over again. I can't do that either, really. Am I going to be creative again? Yes, I think I have to be creative. But how am I going to do that? Well, so actually Matthias and I started to do little small things together that were not extremely physical but had some sort of idea or concept. We actually did more sort of installation work. So we really enjoyed that. We really liked that. And we hadn't actually ever, we hadn't worked together like this, even though we'd worked together in Carte Blanche for years. We hadn't really worked together, just the two of us. So we didn't know if we would like to work together. But that sparked something and we realised, yeah, this works actually. But we didn't decide, oh, we're going to start a company now and do this. You know, it was extremely slow, everything. Matthias had also decided to do something else with his life and he was working in events. And I think we just were becoming more and more depressed. You know, it was like you couldn't get further down in the dumps. Yeah. We were really not coping very well at all.
Pilates, the Pilates lawyer. Oh, the Pilates. Events
coordinator. Yeah, yeah. Actually, what happened was that Matthias got a job at the Norske Theater. And so he came to Oslo to do that job, and I came with him. And it was so nice to be back in Norway. And I hadn't worked in Oslo before, but I thought, oh yeah, it's really nice here. And I also didn't think that anybody would know who I was because I've been in Bergen all those years. But I found that I had a network, and so I started to do small freelance jobs.
And I read that in 2007 you got this three-year work scholarship.
Yes.
So was that about the same time as you kind of came back to Oslo?
Yes, it was.
How was it to get that scholarship?
It was fantastic. Yeah. I think there were lots of surprises when I came back because I'd been so miserable and I hadn't been able to envisage any kind of future working in the thing I love, you know. I think we needed to go into that dark place to understand how important it was. It's really in the blood and something we have to do. Yeah, I just think of it as a positive thing. That we went through that hell, really. It just reaffirms why you were doing it in the first place. So I'd had some very nice years in Carte Blanche. I was there from 95 until I left in 2004. Of course, the last couple of years were a bit hard, but they'd been great years, great job. But I felt like I fell into the freelance life quite well, actually. And it suited me also because it meant that I was able to say no to things. And that was a position I needed to be in. It's something I also learned through becoming ill was to say no. I really wasn't very good at that before. It's very hard for people to... Well, I had to be in this situation to be able to say no. It's almost like I had to have an excuse And this was a good excuse.
Not the best.
Yeah. So.
And then they were back in Oslo, freelancing and kind of doing different projects and got the scholarship.
Yes.
So you talked about this experience with Mathias and working together with him on like smaller projects, which was, I guess, ufarliggjøre. To not make it as scary and kind of big and serious, to just get to play a bit, it sounds like.
Yeah.
That this was something that kind of brought you a bit back into kind of seeing possibilities in yes. dancing again.
Yes.
Was there any other moment or project that you did where you understood that, okay, maybe I can work with dance?
Well, I'd always had a good working relationship with a previous director, Karen Foss, and we had worked on a few projects together, the two of us, actually. And that that relationship continued because we worked a lot with text, so it wasn't just about movement. And she was somebody also that I managed to continue to work with. With my limitations. And of course, at first, so she asked me if I would like to continue to work. And I said I would. But it meant so I was in a safe space in the studio because she allowed me to do my own thing, really. And at first, because I was so afraid, I had wrist supports and padding on my knees and all sorts of things because I just didn't know what it meant for me to be physical, whether it was going to actually make things worse. So that was something that I continued to do. And as I started to build a little bit more, I suppose I got braver. And I thought, I can actually take some risks. It's not affecting me as much as... And I was, of course, I was continually going to the hospital and they were checking me. And the doctor started to say, if it hurts, don't do it. And I was like, well, yeah, as a dancer, that's difficult. Because
that's not a good advice.
But I sort of understood what they meant by that. And so I started to push it a bit more and a bit more because I was working with people who understood the situation. And then I got to the point where I just was managing. There were a couple of – and then people started to ask me if I would like to work. And that was wonderful, of course, to be asked. But there were certain projects that I had to say no to because I knew – it would not be good for my body. So I had to be sensible with the choices, which was really annoying because there were a lot of people I really would have liked to have worked with. But, if they said it's a lot of hand-holding or, it's with a lot of very physical improv, then I said no because... it's difficult when you work with another person and they don't know the problem, then you can't keep stopping them saying, yeah, but don't touch me there and can you move? Yeah, so
because they do ask a lot about the projects before kind of accepting or deny or...
I would ask, if it was a choreographer I didn't know their work so well, I would ask for more specific
And did you ever tell... Did you ever tell them about your situation?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, of course, there were some people who didn't want to work with me because of the illness, and then there were other people who saw it as a challenge, I suppose. But I think most people don't know what it is, and then I had to explain, and then we would come to an agreement. Perhaps this isn't the right project for you or for me or, So, and then there were other projects that I just went into them and I didn't say anything because I knew it was going to be okay. So I would, nobody knew really. And that I also was given the opportunity to work more with acting, actually. That was through Winter Guests with Alan Ayen. And that was freedom for me. It was marvelous to just not have to worry about the physical side of it and just focus on something else. Another challenge, a great challenge to work with text and to, you know. So I was very, very lucky to be able to go to take that path also as another way of to keep living and working in the freelance life.
Velkommen til Kjemperådet. Vi har fått inn et kjempeproblem her. Jeg leser. Jeg på ferie med familien. Det gøy, bortsett fra at jeg har gips på begge beina. Kan ikke bade eller dra noe sted. Jeg føler meg veldig begrenset. Hilsen begrenset far.
Begrenset far trenger ubegrensethet.
Yes. Ja, kanskje ubegrenset data fra 399 med familierabatt hos Telenor.
Ja, det løser jo alt, bortsett fra det med badingen da. Se nye mobilabonnement på Telenor.no.
Yes!
Since 2012, you have been employed by Skoda, and we actually have they've been mentioned several times before in this podcast. It's the Actors and Dance Alliance.
Yes.
But can you tell us shortly about how does that work to be employed by that alliance?
So you have to. It's an absolutely marvelous. I just have to say it's a marvelous thing, Skoda, for actors and dancers. I think it's. Brilliant situation for freelance artists to have that. But you need to be working as a performer. So you have a certain amount of days that you need to be working as a performer over a period of 2 years. And the periods where you're not in work, then you are employed by Skoda and you can attend workshops or it means that you receive a salary from Skoda. And you don't have to relate to NAV in the same way.
Yeah, so it's this period in between different projects where yes. I know a lot of freelancers really struggle.
Yeah.
Because you're kind of, you need that period in between. It's not just different seasons in different businesses. And yeah, and that gives you a very secure kind of safe haven in between those periods. It sounds really good.
It's brilliant. It's you're secure. You have also pension and all those things that you don't normally get. They're there. So it's been a savior really to be employed by Skoda. It's not as easy as it may sound to find all those days as a performer, particularly, I don't know, getting older and relying also some on funding from the Arts Council to be able to continue to exist. So, yeah, it's getting harder and harder.
And in 2014, you started Deed,
yes,
which is your company together with Matthias,
yes,
your boyfriend.
Yes.
It's not really, I like the Norwegian word kjæreste.
Yes, it's my kjæreste, yes.
Your kjæreste. And then how is it to, because now you're 48 and you have your own company, so you've kind of been doing freelance work and then now you're doing performances as part of your company and together with Matthias.
Yes.
And how is kind of your work life now compared to 10 years ago when you were dancing in other people's dance performances?
Oh, it's hard. I think it's very different, actually, very different. Just all the administration is very different. It's an enormous amount of work, writing and just keeping the website up to date. I feel it doesn't come naturally to me. I really have to put my mind to it and go, right, okay, so it's important that these things are I mean, you've been onto the website and I just think, oh my goodness, yes. When did I last look at that?
It's a very, very nice website.
We knew what we were getting into. We knew it wouldn't be easy. And I think we'd also, we'd been trying it out over time. And the first thing we did, which was actually before we established Deed, was a solo performance where I was responsible for the concept and Matthias was the performer. And it was the first time we'd done anything that big, really. And that went very well. It went very smoothly, unnaturally smoothly. Nothing has gone that smoothly since, actually. We were very happy with the result and we got some very nice feedback. And so I think maybe we thought, oh, yeah, this is not that bad, really. Little did we know. But what has been interesting is because we've been working for so many years in so many different versions of ourselves as performers, one thing that we had to try to do was separate ourselves a bit from those artists or those performers and try to really establish ourselves as this is what we're doing now. This is who we are and we're making our own work and the company is called Deed. Because we've been attached to other choreographers and people sort of expect that you are going to continue in that way. And so we've had to make some hard choices actually to say no to work that we feel has to do with identity, who we are and who we've been and who we're becoming. And this has a lot to do with identity. This whole illness stuff as well has really brought those questions up.
Yeah, and you made a performance together with Matthias called Bent Out of Shape.
Bent Out of Shape. And that was our fourth sort of full evening performance that we'd been talking about, and then I just decided, right, we're going to do it. Let's do it. And that was very interesting because we were also trying to bring Matthias into it as and put his perspective as a partner of somebody who's having chronic illness, and we found that very difficult. Actually, We went through it was quite a hard process. I wouldn't say it was enjoyable, that process, no. But we learnt a lot from working with a personal theme. That was something we'd not done before. And I found that really excruciatingly difficult because I didn't want to really talk about myself. I wanted to try to express it on a level that you could actually read into it something else as an audience. But I do have personal text in the performance. And I was really cringing about that, hearing it. But people were saying, no, it's okay. You can say those things. But I found it very hard to listen to. But I think that I needed to go through that to be able to go to this next step, and the next step for me was actually applying for the Diverse Nordic Voices, because I thought, okay, this is really something that I have to do now. And since then, I have I've done a couple of talks where I've spoken about my experience, and I feel much more ready now to approach the subject. And involve other people in it, but it's still new territory for me. It's one thing that it is easier to talk about something that you've created that does come from a very personal place. That is actually simpler somehow. Mm-hmm. That it's not completely abstract like everything else we've done in the past has been very abstract. And that's more difficult to put words onto. This is much simpler. Yeah.
And I'm very curious because often when I talk to freelancers, people structure their life differently in terms of this work-life balance that people talk about.
And yeah.
How much your freelance job comes into your personal life or how you set boundaries. And often they kind of like are smudged together.
Yeah.
And I'm very curious because you, in addition to kind of making a project of your personal kind of disease and your personal story, you also work with Matthias, which you live together with, what is your experience in doing that? Do you have any good advices for people that does the same?
Yes. We're very different. We're quite different how we approach things and how we work and how we look at things. So we have to talk things through, and we quite often argue, actually. But when we go home, we just switch it off. We just manage to do that. It's about eating together and watching some rubbish series. We very often work in the evenings as well, particularly when you have a production. You're just working nonstop. But generally, we are able to switch it off and put it out of our lives. And I don't know why that is, really. Perhaps that has something to do with the fact that if I become too exhausted, I can't function. Fatigue is also part of the illness, even though I don't really suffer from it as badly as some do. But I have to be aware of that. So if I say, no, we're not working anymore, that's it. We're just not working anymore. If you want to do it yourself, you do that. But I'm doing something else I'm switching off now. Mm. I have to do that.
Sounds like you've been very good at kind of training your boundary setting and saying no and kind of really listening to what you need. And
well, I don't know if I've been very good. I think it's taken me a long time to allow myself to do it because I like to work, but I've understood that it's the only way I can keep going is not to burn myself out. And I know what happens to me when I do that, you know. And I think it's difficult because there are some processes that require you can't sit down. You don't have time to rest. But this is the thing that's so great about being a freelancer, because you know there is, okay, there's a goal. I'm going to have a week off at the end of this and I can just do nothing for that week. Or maybe I have to write an application. Oh, yes, there could be. Yeah, there's always something to do, but you know, you do have to structure it. You know, I have to write lists. Today I do this, today I do this. I can put that off until then. And if I do that, it's much more relaxing somehow.
So is there other things that you find kind of, what is the best about being a freelancer?
Well, I think most people say there is some kind of freedom in it for good and bad. I suppose working as we do, it is the best of both worlds. It's both heaven and hell. It's sort of, you know, you live for it, but it's going to kill you. And if you know that, you can deal with those periods where there's not much going on, because those are the periods that are the worst. Those are the periods everybody really feels miserable because they don't feel wanted or needed. And it doesn't matter how old you are, how long you've been in the business, everybody feels that way. The young dancers that we work with for mentoring through Scuda, they're all panicked about not having enough to do. And I suppose that's something that comes with experience, that you deal with that in another way. I still don't like it. I don't like those periods of waiting. If you're waiting for an answer for funding, or is it going to happen? Am I going to be able to continue with this project? You know, that you're really burning for, and then it's rejected, and you have to start thinking again about what to do. And that happens all the time. So we're always at these crossroads where you have to be adaptable and choose different paths. And not everybody wants to do that, I suppose. And I think perhaps sometimes I think, oh, it would be nice to have one of those, just go to work, come home, not think about it. But I know I'd get bored with that. I like variety.
Yeah.
I do like that saying, variety is the spice of life. I do actually believe that. And it doesn't, yeah, in all senses, in life.
You mentioned a bit before that you were also very happy for that kind of a dark kind of cave you went into, because you learned a lot.
Yeah.
And learned how much you kind of appreciate working with dance. Is there other things that you feel actually that you're happy about? I guess it's not something to be happy about, but is there some new reflections or positive things that's come out of having a chronic disease?
Took me a long time to accept or to put the two Susies together, this ill Susie and the artist Susie. They didn't want to be connected, or I didn't want them to be connected. That's better now. Positive things. It's now it's taking me in new directions that I find really interesting, and I would have found interesting anyway. So that's very positive. I almost wish that I'd had that opportunity earlier, because it's there are some amazing people who are so, I don't know, inspiring to watch and be with. So that's a very positive thing. But of course, like I said, it's taken me a while to choose to go on that path, or. And also because it's sort of like a bit invisible, really, which is also something people are starting to talk about now, this invisible disability, because I've seen performers who they are very obviously disabled. And that's something that I maybe isn't so obvious when I perform. So that's also an interesting aspect, and people are coming out and saying, yes, actually, well, it's the same for me, and I've had this for a while, nobody knew about it, and I think that's very interesting, very exciting also. Yeah.
And by talking about it, I think it's really good. You are creating an openness.
Yeah.
Because, as you say, it is hidden, and then it's very easily not talked about as well.
Yeah.
So what do you think for you makes it scary to talk about it?
I suppose I felt a little bit like it was a failure in some way to be ill. That's a very, well, I think things are improving, but I think that still exists, that attitude towards illness in a lot of people, that they say, oh, well, it must be because you did this and you did that, and it's your own fault. So I suppose I had a little bit that feeling, that I was being judged in a negative way. So to talk about it and then feel the opposite of that has been very, very good for me to hear. My family aren't particularly good at talking about it, so it's out of the conversation completely. So that probably has something to do with it. But I've just said no. This is who I am now, and it's really who I am. That has to show in my work as an artist.
Because now we have worked as a dancer for almost 30 years. I want to round off by hearing if there's anything you want to highlight of learnings from kind of being in the field for a long time.
Yes. Well, a lot. I mean, it's taken me all over the place, really. And I've worked with all types of expression, all kinds of ideas. I've met massive audiences, small audiences, children, people who hate what you're doing, people who love what you're doing. It's all over the place. Highs and lows like mad. Fantastic feeling, the best feeling to perform, feel that you've done a good show and hear those people applauding it. That's something that also I think what I've learned about myself is that I really like to be on stage because I feel like another person in a way. There's a confidence there that isn't always there in my everyday being. So I like that I can get to feel that power within myself somehow. So I miss that a little bit. The performing aspect is something that I really, really enjoy a lot, giving that to people. And it doesn't really matter where it is or who it is or how many people it is. It's just something that I thrive doing. And that's very nice to feel. That's very nice to understand about yourself. Why it is you do that. Because I think that sometimes you question, what is it? Why do I want to do this? Why do I want to put myself through this? The adrenaline that's pumping before you do something, and you just feel terrified. And then you go out and you do it, and it's a great feeling. Addiction to that feeling. It's probably hormonal thingies in the brain, isn't it? You know, sort of releasing those good feeling drugs.
Yeah, you get a high.
Yeah, endorphins and yeah. Mm. And I like being physical. I like training. It makes me feel happy. And dance always made me feel that way. Always made me feel happy. Yeah. It's a very simple word, happy, but it was just that. Yeah. And I wouldn't have swapped it for anything. I just felt like it was cut short a bit too early. I wasn't ready for that. Mm. I was ready for at least 10 more years of that kind of work as a dancer. Because my body was fit and well and healthy and strong, and then it was changed almost overnight. So I did question that in the beginning. I felt like I'd been given some kind of talent that was just taken away. And that was hard to understand. Questioning the world, you know, why? But I mean...
and now a bit, yeah. 20 years later, what do you have answers?
No, I don't have any answers, but it's like you say, you reflect on things and you have to see the good things that have come out of it. Otherwise, what else are you going to do? You have to see that. And lots of good things have come out of this. I had to live a different life, another life, not the life I had planned for myself. Particularly, even though I wasn't like I had plans as far as who I was going to work with, how I was going to work, but it was more that I planned to work as a dancer for as long as I could. So that all changed quite fast. And this can happen to anybody, whatever it is. I don't feel alone in the situation. It's not unique, but it is. It can be interesting to talk to people about their experiences of how they coped with it.
Definitely. And I think it's been very interesting hearing your thoughts. Yeah. So thank you for sharing.
Oh, Susie. Thank you for allowing me to. Go on about it.
It's been great. Yeah. Thank you so much. Jeg håper du har likt innholdet du har hørt på. Hvis du har det, så gå veldig gjerne inn på iTunes og gi en liten tilbakemelding og gi en liten rating og spre gjerne ordet til en frilansvenn eller to. Så kan vi fortsette å lage frilanslivet og forhåpentligvis gi deg mye godt frilansesnadder fremover.
Velkommen til Kjemperådet! Vi har fått inn et kjempeproblem her. Jeg leser. Jeg på ferie med familien. Det gøy, bortsett fra at jeg har gips på begge beina. Kan ikke bade eller dra noe sted. Jeg føler meg veldig begrenset. Hilsen begrenset far.
Begrenset far trenger ubegrensethet.
Yes. Ja. Kanskje ubegrenset data fra 399 med familierabatt hos Telenor.
Ja, det løser jo alt, bortsett fra det med badingen da. Se nye mobilabonnement på Telenor.no.
Yes!